testing President-elect Donald Trump for years and gained compromising information about him has been circulating among elected officials, intelligence agents, and journalists for weeks. The dossier, which is a collection of memos written over a period of months, includes specific, unverified, and potentially unverifiable allegations of contact between Trump aides and Russian operatives, and graphic claims of sexual acts documented by the Russians. In response, the president-elect tweeted, "Fake news, a total political witch hunt." The following day, January 11th, I had another conversation with the future president. In 3 years working under President Obama, I'd never spoken to him on the phone and only talked to him alone in person twice. Yet here I was, still in the Obama administration, standing in my FBI headquarters office window, having my second private conversation with Donald Trump in 5 days. Below me, as I held the phone to my ear, I could see cars moving on a darkened Pennsylvania Avenue. Across the street, the Justice Department was aglow with busy offices. I remember looking up and to my right at the brightly lit Washington Monument. I could see it rising high above the new Trump Hotel that had just been opened on Pennsylvania Avenue, walking distance from the White House. President-elect Trump was calling from New York. He started the call by again praising me, which now seemed like a conversational device rather than a sincere expression of approval. He added, "I sure hope you're going to stay." I assured him, again, that I was staying at the FBI. He then moved to the purpose of the call. He said he was very concerned about the leaking of the Russian dossier and how it happened. I wasn't sure if he was implying that a federal agency had leaked it, so I explained that the dossier was not a government document. It had been compiled by private parties and then given to many people, including in Congress and the press. The FBI hadn't asked that it be created or paid for it to be created. The document was not classified and not a government document, so it really wasn't correct that it had been leaked. He then said he had been thinking more about the part I had briefed him about privately at Trump Tower. He had been talking to people who had gone with him on the trip to Moscow for the Miss Universe 2013 pageant. He now recalled that he had not even stayed overnight in Moscow. He claimed he had flown from New York, had only gone to the hotel to change his clothes, and had flown home that same night. And then he surprised me by bringing up the one allegation I had specifically tried not to discuss with him. "Another reason you know this isn't true. I'm a germaphobe. There's no way I would let people pee on each other around me. No way." I actually let out an audible laugh. I decided not to tell him that the activity alleged did not seem to require either an overnight stay or even being in close proximity to the participants. In fact, though I didn't know for sure, I imagined the presidential suite of the Ritz-Carlton in Moscow was large enough for a germaphobe to be at a safe distance from the activity. I thought all of that and said none of it. Instead, I stared out at the monuments and wondered what had happened to me and our country that the FBI director was talking about this with our incoming president. Having delivered his defense on a subject I didn't care about for the second time, the president-elect ended the call. I went to find my chief of staff, Jim Rubicki, to tell him the world had gone crazy and I was caught in the middle of it. It stayed crazy. Chapter 13. Tests of Loyalty. Friendship, connections, family ties, trust, loyalty, obedience. This was the glue that held us together. Mafia boss Joseph Bonanno, in his autobiography, Man of Honor. Donald J. Trump was inaugurated the 45th President of the United States on January 20th, 2017, before a crowd whose number immediately and famously came into dispute. The new president was determined to demonstrate that the number of spectators who turned out for him, which was sizable, surpassed the number of people present for Barack Obama's 2009 inauguration. They did not. No evidence, photographic or otherwise, would move him off his view, which, as far as everyone but his press team seemed to agree, was simply false. This small moment was deeply disconcerting to those of us in the business of trying to find the truth, whether in a criminal investigation or in assessing the plans and intentions of America's adversaries. Much of life is ambiguous and subject to interpretation. but there are things that are objectively, verifiably either true or false. It was simply not true that the biggest crowd in history attended the inauguration, as he asserted, or even that Trump's crowd was bigger than Obama's. To say otherwise was not to offer an opinion, a view, a perspective. It was a lie. 2 days later, on Sunday, January 22nd, I attended a late afternoon reception at the White House for the leaders of the various law enforcement agencies who had provided security and support for the inaugural activities. The FBI's counterterrorism, intelligence, and SWAT capabilities had been deployed that day, closely integrated with the Secret Service, as they are for every inauguration. I was told President Trump wanted to thank the agencies for all their hard work. This struck me as a really nice thing for the president to do. Despite that, I didn't love the idea of going personally, for a couple of reasons. First, I didn't think it would be helpful for the FBI if I were seen in videos or photographs hanging around with the new president. Given that so many people seemed to think I'd helped to elect him, it made little sense to support a false narrative that I, and by inference the Bureau, was somehow close to President Trump. Second, the NFL conference championship games were on TV. The 5 p.m. reception would cause me to miss the end of the Packers against the Falcons and the beginning of the Steelers against the Patriots. Was the new president not a football fan? But my staff argued that it was important for me to go. I was the FBI director. I didn't want to insult the other leaders or the new administration by not showing up. And I told myself my concerns were overblown. This would be a group reception, and that meant no individual press pictures of me with the president. Also, I decided to record the football games on my DVR and avoid any conversation about the scores until I had the chance to watch. So I went to the White House. Just as I'd hoped, the reception began as a pleasant mingling with the law enforcement leaders from local, state, and federal agencies. There were about 30 of us there, including leaders of the United States Capitol Police, the Washington Metropolitan Police, and the United States Park Police. These people and their agencies were long-standing partners of the FBI, and many of us knew each other from that work. We gathered in the large oval blue room in the residence of the White House. At the edges of the room, the White House staff had set up small tables with finger foods and non-alcoholic drinks. I moved around the room shaking hands and thanking folks for their work with the FBI. I was preoccupied about keeping a healthy distance from Trump, so I figured out which way the president would likely enter the room and mingled my way to the opposite end, by the windows looking over the south lawn toward the Washington Monument. I couldn't get farther away without climbing out the window, an option that would begin to look more appealing as time went by.